That number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. Special thanks to Finding Racial and Economic Equality and Strength Through Peace in Fort Collins, and to Carol D'Estacio and Desiree Fisk. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
And there you have it. That was the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Glenn Greenwald on Why Privacy Matters. Now, coming up, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. It is 9:49. Well, it's 10 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. Coming up, 15 minutes of news, comment, and jiggery pokery. Today's guests are, the EPA has got to jiggery pokery to burn alongside the methane emissions. They do. They're shameless. They're shameless. The lot of them. Today's guests are not shameless, though, but they are well informed. And have they ever got news for you? Sean Stevens with Oregon Wild joins us to talk about the selling off the Elliott State Forest. And we've got also Cassidy Sharp with Greenpeace to talk about the federal government yesterday gave Royal Dutch Shell the final permit it needs to drill for oil in the Arctic Ocean, right on the heels of President Obama's what do we call it? Limp effort to resuscitate his legacy insofar as environmental issues are concerned, because you know what? He's going to have to live with this. He's the guy that signed off on the death of the Arctic. That's what he's going to be remembered for, because climate is the only thing at issue in this decade and decades to come. We all know it. It's just a little bit hard to incorporate it into a daily cup of coffee in the morning. But nonetheless, Obama's really blown it here. And of course, no one's going to remember his meaningless effort on climate change. No, no one will remember that. But they are going to remember the disaster unfolding in the Arctic. Has it happened yet? Nope. Is it on its way? Yes, it is. And, of course, today we get news from the EPA that they want to cut methane emissions by 40 to 45%. Good morning, everybody. Methane is many, many times worse than carbon emissions. Maybe we should go a little higher than 40 to 45%. Maybe, you think? And returning to our first guest, Sean Stevens, who will join us in just a sec. We're going to go through a few headlines first, but let's not forget that all of this is done because we're supposed to be, this is going to impress children that they got a good education because we clear-cut the Elliott State Forest. No, I don't think they're going to be impressed with that. I don't think kids are going to be, yes, thank you. Thank you, previous generation, for destroying what should have been our right to decent air to breathe. Thanks a lot. So after the federal government yesterday signed off on Shell's big adventure, we also have the next colonel of the Indian Band in British Columbia has issued an eviction notice to the mining company responsible for last week's massive tailings pond breach. They are doing this before a similar mine is developed on their land, which is exactly what Imperial Metals plans to do. And last Wednesday, St. Paul, Minnesota, took a big step forward and joined a growing list of metropolitan areas that have renamed Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. Come on, Portland. And on August 11th, the Ironbound Community Corporation held a protest outside Seton Hall Law School against the 2011 Energy Master Plan. The protest was part of the Summer of Our Power, an Indigenous movement that is growing momentum across the country. Soon after Ironbound presented their protest, of course, the police moved in hard and fast. Summer of Power news, more from Indigenous peoples on the KBOO website. I'm going to put everything I could find on this up there for you. And politics of California's water system. Wow, what a rat's nest. In a decision bursting with symbolism, the California State Water Resources Control Board recently announced its intention to draw down the main water supply reservoir for 500,000 people who live just outside Sacramento to only 12% of capacity because it's about to turn into a gigantic mud pond. If this actually happens and there is no El Nino to replenish dwindling water supplies, then Folsom and surrounding communities would be the harbinger of the rest of California. And people still keep coming. I say, go for it. Move to California. It's probably exactly where you should be, if that's that's their idea of a life. And busloads of United Mine Workers of America, miners and retirees, roared in protest outside Patriot Coal headquarters yesterday as the bankrupt company looks to nix a union contract, including their pension contributions and health benefits. Company went bankrupt because it was mismanaged and because it's in the wrong business, for starters. And, of course, the miners and pensioners are going to be carrying the burden, the financial burden of the corporate CEOs. Greenpeace, and that's about it for our headlines. Of course, there's a lot more. Some of our power is a big, big deal. Indigenous communities are rolling across the land, and it's something that, weirdly enough, is not reported in mainstream news. Fancy that. Sean Stevens with Oregon Wild joins us now. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
We're delighted to have you with us. We're not particularly delighted about the Elliott State Forest. What's happening with that? What just knocks me sideways is that they're providing funding for the state. What makes them think that this is that future generations are going to be grateful because they got a crappy education, and the trees are gone.
Yeah, I mean, the Elliott is one of those tricky situations, and it exists in different parts of the West where states were granted lands that were meant to fund things like schools, and so it's part of the common school fund. And for a long time, the way they decided to earn money for schools was to log the heck out of it. And, you know, change was forced not only because Oregonians have shifted their values about what they think forests should be used for, clean water, clean air, recreation, et cetera, wildlife, but also because of legal mandates that the state has been under. And frankly, over the last 5 to 10 years, there really wasn't a lot of creative thinking with the Elliott.
They've had 100 years to figure this out. We used to have lots of trees and not so many people. Now we've got way too many people, not enough trees. You would think they would come up with a better way to fund schools.
Well, I think one of the disappointing things from this past legislative session was that there was a good solution on the table that seemed to be getting some momentum, and it's a model that Washington State has used for their common school fund lands. They've set up a trust fund lands transfer. So essentially, you can take these common school fund lands that need to provide money for schools, and rather than logging the lands to provide that money, the state can buy them out with a trust fund so that they can be put into some form of conservation. And this has been around for a long time in Washington. And essentially, the legislature each year considers some parcels of land and transfers them over to a different ownership, whether it's to parks or something else. And the Common School Fund gets money to fund schools, and the trees get to stay standing. And we had a proposal like this moving through the Oregon legislature this past session, and it stalled out. And it was unclear why, because it seemed like a win-win solution. But I do think there are still people who view the Elliott as, you know, just two-by-fours and toilet
paper.
Yeah,
it's a commodity. And of course, like, how did that? Oh wow! How did that possibly get stalled and die in committee? Well, timber. You think the timber industry, the Koch brothers? You think Alec had something to do with the legislation? Maybe it did. So, Sean, just to wrap things up for us, because we don't have much time left, we've got to get on here. So, can you direct listeners to websites and so forth where they could find out more about this and possibly raise hue and cry over what is being done to our forests in the name of funding schools? And they're not, if that's what they're funding, they're not getting much for their money, because we're almost dead last as far as education is concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's the really important thing right now, is that the state land board, which is in charge of managing these lands, it's made up of the governor, the secretary of state, and the state treasurer, and they just voted that the Elliott will go up for sale, but they put some specific stipulations on what the new owner is able to do with the land, and it does have some good conservation language. The key is that this land cannot go into just any old private ownership, because we know what's going to happen to it if it does. It's going to be logged. And right now we have an opportunity, when we head to this next legislative session, where the legislature, with leadership from the governor's office and others, can actually put this trust lands transfer model in place. They can pass legislation that allows the state to be the buyer for the land and comply with the land board ruling. And that's what I think people need to do right now, is they need to get in touch with Governor Brown, with Secretary of State Ruth Atkins, and with Treasurer Wheeler, to say, hey, you need to tell the legislature this is what needs to happen, because the Elliott's too important. It's, half of it is over 100 years old. It's the only state lands that we have that are these older, mature forests. And it really needs to be protected. And that's what I think people need to do, is go ahead and get in touch with those folks. And if you want to learn more, you can go to OregonWild.org or our partners at Cascadia Wildlands, who have been working on this for many years.
Thank you so much, Sean. So there is a bit of hope. There is a bit of light shining down through those old ancient branches up there. Thanks for that. My guest has been Sean Stevens with Oregon Wild. We move on now to speak with Cassidy Sharp, returning to the KBOO Air Cascadia airwaves with Greenpeace. Good morning, Cassidy. Thanks for being with us today. We are just about ready to speak with Cassidy, not quite yet, bringing you up to speed, though. If, in case you didn't hear this, and it's been bruited about extensively all across the web, but you know what? I myself like being out on the farm and away from all of this sometimes. Anyway, the federal government on Monday did indeed sign off the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. Fancy that. The Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement announced that it approved the permit to drill below. How could they do this? How do you justify something like that? How do you say to yourselves, and how do you announce to the gullible public that would rather be playing video games, that this is about to happen, that this is happening? They had to send the icebreaker, the Fennica, all the way down to Portland to be repaired. Why? I don't doubt they're going to be breaking that much ice, except to make, you know, drinks to celebrate getting exactly what they wanted. The corporate fix has been in for a very long time. As Catherine Austin Fitz of the Solari site points out, The corporatization of the government has gone well beyond the point of no return. Corporations get exactly what they want. Government only exists to rubber stamp their demands. Good morning, Cassidy. Thank you so much for being with us again today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So this went through. The sign-off was the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. How do they justify that? If there's safety, I can see if it's the Bureau of Corporate Profits, yeah, they might sign off on it. But wait a minute, this is the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. I don't get it.
It's truly baffling. I'm just as confused as you are, especially considering that just days before the Obama administration approved Shell's final permit, he releases this grand video about going to Alaska to visit in communities impacted by climate change, calling that state on the front lines of climate change one of the most urgent issues. So it's truly deeply hypocritical for him to make this sort of grand stand on how much he cares about climate change and then greenlight a project that will directly contribute to it. So it is truly baffling, yet at the same time, I definitely have a lot of hope for the movement. We've seen people all over the world, and most recently in Portland, stand up to Arctic drilling. No matter what Shell tries to do this summer, it's not going to undo that activism and those acts of courage. So I do feel hopeful at the same time that there is more to be done to stop Arctic drilling and to do more substantial things on climate change.
What's next then? What do we do now? Do you kayak up to the Arctic Circle? There's got to be something that people can do in the name of preserving this extraordinary environment that is about to be completely despoiled. It'll be gone.
So there is a.
I have a bad feeling about time.